Good morning, everyone. You're very welcome to St. Stephen's Green Unitarian Church. Welcome to everyone who is watching and those who are listening on our webcam. And welcome to you if you are listening to us on our recordings page on our website. My name is Gavin Byrne, and I'm a member of this congregation. And I'm also a ministry student with the Unitarian College, hence the hoodie I'm wearing. I thought I would model it for you today. So today is our favorite reading service, where members of the congregation will share some of the writings that have inspired them. As a church, we seek inspiration and wisdom from many sources, not just what we find in Scripture. So our opening words are from Being Together, Unitarians Celebrate Congregational Life, which is edited by Matthew Smith. A faith community. A Unitarian congregation is a faith community with a distinctive faith. Many people interpret faith as the holding of particular beliefs and adhering to specific creeds, doctrines, confessions, dogmas, or theological propositions. But this is a misapprehension. When it comes to the grand propositions of theology and metaphysics, it is our Unitarian tradition to stand in awe and wonder before the great mystery, rather than say too much about it. The members of a Unitarian church will not claim to have full knowledge or a monopoly on truth, nor will they accept anyone else's claim to do so. Our limited words and concepts cannot capture the infinities or intricacies of the cosmic process of which we ourselves are but a momentary incarnation. Our faith lies rather in the humble assurance that we belong in this universe, that life's meaning and purpose are forged in the outworking of our unique potential as creative spiritual beings. Our faith affirms that there is a uniting bond between all people, all creation, if only we can feel it and manifest it in our life together. It is a faith experienced in loving community, but not readily pinned down or defined. Being Together, Unitarians Congregational Life. So, as today you listen to the readings offered to us, perhaps one will truly speak to you, and you might like to read it again. So, seek out the reader at coffee after the service, and perhaps spend the week with it. And now our chalice lighting. We begin our service this morning by lighting our chalice, which is lit everywhere Unitarians gather in prayer, in celebration, in searching, and in love. And now this sacred space, which is gifted to us, is now alive with friendship, song, poetry, and the wisdom of many souls. May we be reminded here of our highest aspirations and be inspired to bring our gifts of love and service to the altar of humanity. May we know once again that we are not isolated beings, but connected in mystery and miracle to the universe, to this community, and to each other. Amen. And our first hymn this morning is number 10, O Life That Maketh All Things New. Our first reader this morning is Andrew.
Good morning, everybody. This morning, I'm reading a reading, a piece that was written by somebody called Father Joe Lucy. Some of you may have known him. He was a Salesian priest, and I had the privilege of knowing him in the early 90s when I was a volunteer in what was then Focus Point, which is now Focus Ireland, and he spent his life working with the homeless, and he died very young. He died at age 47, I think, in 2008. And he wrote this, I think it's 1997, and it's a book called Spiritual Journeys that was edited by Sister Stan. and I think it gives you a real sense of what a wonderful person he was in this reading. So. Tonight on street work, I met a young woman who had been sleeping rough for almost 3 years. None of the homeless hostels could cope with her outbursts. Any attempt to hold her had failed. Tonight she sat quietly on the steps of one of the bigger stores. "Hello, Patricia," I said. "How are you tonight?" Patricia didn't reply. She sat there silently, refusing even to look up and acknowledge my presence. I decided to sit with her on the steps and to listen for a while to her silence. Her silence filled the street with pain. It screamed at the emptiness of the haunting shadows. In her silence, she had invited me to listen to her story, which that night could find no words. Her silence reminded me again of the depths in which we walk, of the vast experiences which we carry, and of how little of each other we really get to know. At times, I fantasize about accompaniment. I imagine ministry as a way of being with another, and yet I can be blind to the other's signals and deaf to the other's cry. Our language fails us. I wish to make contact through word, through touch, and I fail. I am left with the spaces of non-communication, the mystery spaces. In the end, I don't know if I've ever met the other, except perhaps in the dreamscape of fools, whose desire to meet is the perfection of their meeting. That space we share when we meet each other is a space of mystery, of knowing, of not knowing, of trust and doubt. Insofar as my ministry is a ministry of accompaniment, it is a ministry that refuses to allow the illusion of success. My walking with you is a humble path, a path where I can never be certain which turn to take, where each step moves us both into the mystery of the one who calls. In this space between us, we'll talk of the glimpses we get, of the joys and fears, of the news of the day, and of the climate. Even in the evening, we'll gather around the fire, so that the dream in my heart and the dream in your heart may find a voice and echo in the melodies of our song. To accompany you on your journey, I need to inhabit my own journey and face again the poverty of my heart. At times, I too doubt the story of the dream. I too suspect that the pilgrimage is a farce, the idle tale of a jaded wizard. At times, I too am drawn to the addictions that are strewn across our way. I yearn for satisfaction, for comfort, for contentment, for anything that will fill the void that I sometimes feel within. I long for anything that dulls the pain and deludes me into thinking that I am part of an exciting plot and that I am important, essential to the unfolding theme. I am a poor man who meets you on your journey. No, not so much a knowledgeable guide, but a beggar who forages for some scraps for the evening feast. I am a poor man whose only wealth is in my dreams, in the stories I tell, stories to warm a night and speed away to dawn. At times, some travelers pass who have no time to wait. A village fair is calling them. The hour is need. So much will happen for them there. This little patch of road is boring them. Their pace quickens to a merchant's pace. The business is all. I am a poor man who meets with other poor ones along a little backward way. Thanks.
Our next reader is Madeline.
These poems, three short poems, are more about self-care than what we've just heard. They come from a lovely book called Poetry Pharmacy. This is one of three books. The others are pink and blue. And on one side of the page is a description of the problem you may be facing, and on the other side is a poem that speaks to that. I haven't chosen them for any particular problem, but just because I liked these poems. This one is called Thinking by Walter D. Wintle. If you think you are beaten, you are. If you think you dare not, you don't. If you'd like to win but think you can't, it's almost a cinch you won't. If you think you lose, you're lost. For out of the world we find, success begins with a fellow's will. It's all in the state of mind. If you think you're outclassed, you are. You've got to think high to rise. You've got to be sure of yourself before you can ever win a prize. Life's battles don't always go to the stronger or faster man, but soon or late, the man who wins is the one who thinks he can. This one is called Love After Love by someone called Derek Walcott. The time will come when, with elation, you will greet yourself arriving at your own door, in your own mirror, and each will smile at the other's welcome and say, "Sit here, eat." You will love again the stranger who was yourself. Give wine, give bread, give back your heart to itself, to the stranger who has loved you all your life, whom you ignored for another. Who knows you by heart, take down the love letters from the bookshelf, the photographs, the desperate notes, peel your own image from the mirror, sit, feast on your life. And a tiny one to finish, for my brilliant image by Hafez, translated by Daniel Ladinsky. I wish I could show you, when you are lonely or in darkness, the astonishing light of your own being.
Thank you, Madeline. And now it's time for our children and young people's story. Once upon a time, there lived a leaf called Leafy Leaf. He lived upon a great old tree high above the city. You wouldn't believe what he could see way up there near the sky. He could see all the birds fly by. His friends were bees, owls, and squirrels who played above the boys and girls. But then one night it got so cold that lots of leaves just turned to gold. And some were red and some were brown, and they all jumped together to the ground. Leafy wondered what he should do. Should he jump down to the ground too? But he was scared and didn't want to go. That's when the wind really began to blow. But a wise old owl who lived down the branch said, "Go on, Leafy, take a chance. There's a great big world down below. You might like it, you never know. There's lots of things for you to see. There's more to life than just this tree." Leafy wasn't sure what to believe. He was a leaf afraid to leave. Then, much to his surprise, the wind took Leafy for a ride. He started to spin, he started to swirl, and then he saw a whole new world. There were houses and buildings all lit with lights. Leafy saw some incredible sights. He'd never had so much fun, and in through a window, he suddenly spun. There was a girl in the room taking a nap, who Leafy woke up when he fell on her lap. The girl had such a friendly face, she said, "Leafy, do you like this place?" Then Leafy said he was all alone. The girl said, "Come and share my home." She put Leafy in this book where all her friends could come and look. Leafy said, "It's the nicest present a leaf could receive, and I'll promise you I'll never leave." And please say hello to Leafy. And our next reading is from David.
Good morning. So I'm going to read a poem called Coleman's Bed. So it's by a poet called David White. And it's about a place down in the Burren, which was visited by a Christian saint, kind of maybe in the Middle Ages. So I'm just going to read a little bit about the context first. I was 13 consecutive years visiting St. Coleman's Retreat in the Burren Mountains of North Clare before I felt able to write this piece for this very, very invitational place. A cave and a ruined chapel nestled above Hazelwood beside a fresh spring and sheltered by limestone cliff. Coleman was a powerful agent of political and societal change who helped not only to transform Irish society, but post-Roman Europe, sending monks out from the Irish Church to form islands of cultural, contemplative and agricultural sanity into the most remote parts of a violent and beleaguered continent. The place and the life remembered are exemplary. This poem is written to represent the series of ever deeper questions that the place makes to each pilgrim visitor and looks at the way we settle best into a place in the same way we settle into our own bodies as a series of invitations. The rested journey into the breath and the body we inhabit is the same pilgrimage we make into the outer landscape and body of the world. There is always an unspoken question behind every pilgrimage, an unspoken question I found answered in the lovely and surprising revelation that came to me at the end of the poem. Okay, so I'm going to read the poem. I saw him down in the Burren College of Art during the summer. And when he recites them, he kind of repeats different lines and sentences in a kind of like improvisational way, which I won't try to do, but it does kind of help you to digest it a bit, because it's kind of can get quite complex. Make a nesting now, a place to which the birds can come. Think of Kevin's prayerful palm holding the blackbird's egg, and be the one looking out from this place who warms interior forms into light. Feel the way the cliff at your back gives shelter to your outward view, and then bring in from those horizons all discordant elements that seek a home. Be taught now among the trees and rocks how the discarded is woven into shelter. Learn the way things hidden and unspoken slowly proclaim their voice in the world. Find that far inward symmetry to all outward appearances. Apprentice yourself to yourself. Begin to welcome back all you sent away. Be a new annunciation. Make yourself a door through which to be hospitable, even to the stranger in you. See with every turning day how each season wants to make a child of you again. Wants you to become a seeker after rainfall and birdsong. Watch now how it weathers you to a testing in the tried and true. Tells you with each falling leaf to leave and slip away, even from that branch that held you. To go when you need to be courageous, to be like the last word you'd want to say before you leave the world. Above all, be alone with it all, a hiving off, a corner of silence amidst the noise. Refuse to talk even to yourself and stay in this place until the current of the story is strong enough to float you out. Ghost then to where others in this place have come before, under the hazel, by the ruined chapel, below the cave where Coleman slept. Become the source that makes the river flow, and then the sea beyond. Live in this place as you were meant to, and then, surprised by your abilities, become the ancestor of it all, the quiet, robust, and blessed saint that your future happiness will always remember. Thank you.
Now, Dennis is our next reader.
4 weeks ago, at my brother's funeral, I recited from a passage from the book of the prophet Isaiah, chapter 55, and it seemed to give a lot of comfort to all our friends and relatives. So I thought, as some of other of our members here have suffered bereavements and lost loved ones recently, I thought it would be nice to do it again. It's the everlasting covenant. Seek ye the Lord while he may be found. Call ye upon him while he is near. Let the wicked forsake his way, and the unrighteous man his thoughts, and let him return unto the Lord, and he will have mercy upon him, and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord. Because the heaven is high above the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. For as the rain cometh down, and the snow from heaven, and watereth the earth, and returneth not thither, but maketh it bring forth and bud, that it may give seed to the sower, and bread to the eater, so shall my word be that goeth forth out of my mouth. It shall not return unto me void, but it shall accomplish that which I please, and it will prosper in the thing whereto I sent it. For ye shall go out with joy and be led forth with peace, and the mountains and the hills shall break forth before you into singing, and all the trees of the field shall clap their hands. Instead of the thorn shall come up the fir tree, and instead of the briar shall come up the myrtle tree. And it shall be to the Lord for a name, for an everlasting sign that shall not be cut off.
Thank you, Dennis. Now let us sing hymn number 90, God Speaks to Us in Bird and Song. Now, Janet will share her reading.
Morning, everybody. Today's reading is from a book titled Still Points by Brother Richard. And it is titled Meditation Mobile. Mobile. Not walking along. Mobile. Mobile meditation. When the mobile phone went off, right in the middle of the meditation, there was a wave of discomfort you could nearly touch, as the lady who brought it in desperately tried to silence it. One could almost hear the inner questioning around her. Did you not see the mobile phone sign outside? Did you not think to check that your phone was on silent? Though truth be told, in the midst of the inner tutting was another thought. I am so glad it wasn't my mobile phone that went off. And is my mobile phone on silent? How long before I should check? Only the monk smiled. And at the end of the meditation, to the surprise of all, bowed to the phone owner and thanked her for revealing to us all the depth of our distraction. He went on to say, many of you were not really here, but the ringing brought you back. Many of you leapt to judgment. So the ringing revealed the real depth of your compassion. Many of you became concerned about your own phone going off. So the ringing revealed the depth of your attachment to self. How precious was that distraction for what it showed you of yourself? How precious are all distractions when they reveal to us how far we have traveled away from our practice, away from our prayer. How precious they are if we consider them to simply be shining signposts on the way of return, on the way home. Thank you.
Now, Jill is our next reader.
I'm going to read two short poems. The first is an extract from Pity for Poor Africans by William Cowper, written in 1788. William Cowper was a well-respected English poet, wrote a number of anti-slavery pieces, including one quoted by Martin Luther King Jr. An extract of this one is posted prominently in the National Museum of African American History and Culture. But I'm just going to read a small part of it. I own I am shocked at the purchase of slaves, and fear those who buy them and sell them are knaves. What I hear of their hardships, their tortures and groans, it's almost enough to draw pity from stones. I pity them greatly, but I must be mum, for how could we do without sugar and rum? Especially sugar, so needful, we see. What, give up our desserts, our coffee and tea? Besides, if we do, the French, Dutch and Danes will heartily thank us, no doubt, for our pains. If we do not buy the poor creatures, they will, and tortures and groans will be multiplied still. The second poem is a modern response to that, written by Dirk Powell in 2018. I own I am shocked at prisoners in the mines, and kids sewing clothes for our most famous lines. What I hear of their wages seems slavery indeed. It's enough that I fear it's all rooted in greed. I pity them greatly, but I must be mum, for what about nickel, cobalt, lithium, the garments we wear, the electronics we own? What, give up our tablets, our laptops, and phones? Besides, if we do, the prices will soar. And who could afford to pay $1 more? Sitting here typing, it seems well worth the price. And you there listening on your favorite device. This bargain we're in, well, it's not quite illicit. So relax, my friend, we're not all complicit.
Now, Doreen and Josh will play for us. Thank you. Liz is our next reader.
Good morning, everyone. I'm going to read a poem by Caroline Duffy, the Scottish poet, and it's probably her most famous one, so it may be familiar to some of us here. And it's called Prayer. Some days, although we cannot pray, a prayer utters itself. So a woman will lift her head from the sieve of her hands and stare at the minims sung by a tree, a sudden gift. Some nights, although we are faithless, the truth enters our heart. That small, familiar pain. Then a man will stand stock still, hearing his youth in the distant Latin chanting of a train. Pray for us now. Grade one piano scales console the lodger looking out across a Midlands town. Then dusk, and someone calls a child's name as though they named their loss. Darkness outside, inside the radio's prayer. Rockall, Mallon, Dogger, Finisterre.
Our final reader this morning is Pam, and after Pam, we will have our collection.
When I was choosing a reading for today, I felt I had two choices. I either return to something that I had read before and that you were probably bored with, or look for something new. So I've gone for the something new option. This is an essay that appeared in yesterday's Daily Telegraph. It's written by the philosopher and author Julian Baggini, How to Revive Your Sense of the Sublime. And I have shortened it very slightly. Julian Baggini writes, according to TripAdvisor, I live in a city where many pizzas are awesome, and even the chocolate chip cookies are sublime. If he could read such reviews, the German romantic landscape painter Caspar David Friedrich would turn in his grave. Friedrich belongs to a long tradition in which awesome and sublime only describe some of our profoundest human experiences, not just a good lunch. And 250 years after his birth, we should do well to remind ourselves of what these words really mean and why we need them. Friedrich's most famous painting, Wanderer Above the Sea of Fog, painted in 1818, has become the go-to image to accompany any text on the sublime and its power to inspire all. It is not simply a depiction of a beautiful landscape. It is an image designed to capture a sense of the dizzying vastness beyond comprehension. Every element of the painting contributes to this. There is the vertiginous feeling created by a human figure on the top of the mountain, where the fog with its formlessness shrouds the landscape in mystery. In the distance, there are peaks which block an inconceivably distant horizon. It is also critical that the wanderer has his back turned to us. People gazing over landscapes tend to be seen as masters of all they survey, humans at the apex of creation. By having the wanderer's back turned, his feelings become as inscrutable as the nature he is in. He becomes possessed by the landscape as much as in possession of it. Friedrich may be the preeminent visual poet of the sublime, but philosophers have theorized about it before and since. For all the variations in their theories, one common thread is the idea that the sublime arouses both negative and positive emotions. There is something exhilarating about the storms depicted by J.M. Turner's paintings, or simply being on top of a sheer cliff. But there is also much that is fearful and anxiety-provoking about them. This distinguishes the sublime from the merely beautiful. The sublime provokes awe, and human beings have found the power, unpredictability, and scale of the natural world awesome for millennia. Awe is at once both a universal human reaction to the world and a very personal one. It starts with a feeling that we've all had of vastness and power beyond comprehension. But what we do with that feeling varies enormously. I think we go wrong when we seek to tame it by giving it a neat interpretation or trying to put it to some practical purpose. The feeling of awe provides no actual evidence for the existence of God or for the oneness of all being. Neither should it be used to impart fear, rally people for a great cause, or even as therapy. Rather, we should respond to it with what Keats called negative capability. That is, when a man is capable of being in the uncertainties, mysteries, and doubts without any irritable reaching after fact and reason. Awe is our reminder that the world is too big, too strange to be entirely scrutable by the human mind, but that can serve as an inspiration for scientists to delve deeper. But first and foremost, it is a feeling, and he's still talking about awe here, worth holding on to in itself. To be fully human is to be aware of the marvel of existence, unable to fully comprehend it, and able to live in that space where the magic of the world and the modesty of our intellect meet. Words by Julian Bagini.
Thank you.
Our meditation this morning is a mindful exercise, and it's something you can take away with you. And the meditation will be accompanied by Will. As the music begins to sound, remove yourself from here and take a walk. Take a walk in your favorite park or hill, riverbank or lane or street. What do you notice? What can you hear? And what can you smell? Meander along, mindful of your environment. Be alone or silent with a companion. And notice something you haven't noticed before. Thank you, Will. Our notices. So please join us for tea and coffee downstairs after the service and grab a copy of the August edition of Auskult. Thank you to all who have contributed to today's service. Those who prepared the church, Ayla, thank you. Played the music, Josh, Doreen, and Will. Janet for welcoming us. And all of the readers, thank you very much. And downstairs, the coffee and tea makers are busy getting the hall ready. The Wednesday meditation, yes, Paul, off you go. The Wednesday meditation led by Pam, every Wednesday here in the church. So it begins at 1 p.m. and finishes at 1:30, a quiet and inspiring time in the middle of your week. I highly recommend it. Rory Delaney is continuing his annual history walks today, and it's a trip on the tram, a short Lewis journey to Dominic Street, followed by a walk around the Capel Street area. And we will gather after coffee. Convincing Rory to cross the Liffey just for a few hours took a bit of time and effort, but it will be worth it, Rory, won't it? So we will look after you, don't worry. We will be holding a series of concerts here in the church for Culture Night, which is Friday the 20th of September. And the program will be led by the Classical Musicians Network, and they meet here in the church on a monthly basis. We will also, hopefully, have organ scholars from the Royal Irish Academy of Music, and Josh will complete the evening with a selection of his music. So the evening will begin at 6, and we'll finish by 9:30, so please drop in any time during 6 to half 9. Now let's sing our final hymn, number 30, Praise to the Lord the Almighty. Our final blessing is for you, for the mums and the dads, the grandparents, the sisters and brothers, and for those who are loving friends. Our final blessing is for those who work and those who volunteer, and those who give and receive with love and gratitude. And it is for you who have lost someone precious in your life. A blessing by John O'Donohue. May the light of your soul guide you. May the light of your soul bless the work you do with the secret love and warmth of your heart. May you see in what you do the beauty of your own soul. May the sacredness of your work and love bring healing, light, and renewal to those who work with you and to those who see and receive your work and your love. May your work never weary you. May it release within you wellsprings of refreshment, inspiration, and excitement. May your love never weary you. May it release within you wellsprings of refreshment, inspiration, and excitement. May you be present in what you do. May you ever become lost. May you never become lost in the bland absences. May the day never burden. May dawn find you awake and alert, approaching your new day with dreams, possibilities, and promises. May evening find you gracious and fulfilled. May you go into the night blessed, sheltered, and protected. And may your soul calm, console, and renew you. And let us all say Amen, Amen.